This is Relationship Truth Unfiltered, a podcast that ditches destructive traditions and delves into real biblical teaching about relationships. Welcome. I'm Julie Sedanko here with relationship expert Leslie Vernick, and today we are talking about safety and trust. Leslie, these are a couple of big ticket items that are missing from destructive marriages. What are some of the big areas where trust is essential in order to have even a decent marriage?
So I think there's five areas of trust that we aren't always aware of in the Christian community or even in the secular community when we're talking about rebuilding broken trust. We usually think of the sexual fidelity area, like, oh, he's cheating on me, he's watching porn, he's broken my trust. And obviously that's an important area, and it's a very frequent area of broken trust in relationships. But there's four other areas, and one of them is safety. Can I trust that I'm safe with you? Can I trust that if I speak up or say something or do something you don't like, that you won't harm me, that I'm safe to be me? I can be my full self. I don't have to blow my light out in order to not threaten you. I don't have to be small in order for you to not feel threatened. I don't have to be a robot or a role. I can be a full person, and you value that. I don't have to shrink into just the role of a wife or the role of a mom in order for you to treat me well. So I think that's really important. Safety. Do I feel safe? Do I trust you with my safety? Can I drive in the car with you? Can I sleep next to you and know that you won't harm me while I'm sleeping? You won't try to sexually assault me when I'm not awake, or you won't, you know, take advantage of me in those ways, or you won't drive recklessly with me in the car. So safety is an important area of trust in relationships, especially marriage. The next area is authenticity. Is, can I trust my husband to be who he says he is? We hear so many women who are married to Jekyll and live with Hyde, or vice versa, that they don't really know who their husband is. At church, he's an amazing man. He's the leader. He's an elder. He's a pastor. He's a wonderful servant. He's giving to everybody. He's listening well. And at home, he's completely checked out. He doesn't listen. He's, you know, watching TV all day. He's not talking to you. He's not engaging, or he's raging and being, you know, a selfish person who's demanding his way all the time. And so you don't really know who this man is. And it's hard to trust someone who you're not sure of their true character. So that would be another area of trust where trust breaks down. So safety, honesty, and authenticity. Is he who he says he is? Does he say and do the same thing? Or is there an incongruence in what he does and what he says? The third area is just very simple, but I think it matters. And that's reliability. So when he says something, can you trust it? Not just about, I'm not watching porn, but what about just, yeah, I'll fix the toilet tomorrow. Does he? Or I paid the bills.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, I paid the bills. Yeah, they're paid. Are they? Or I took $50 out of the ATM and it's really $500. Can you trust him to be reliable? I'll pick the kids up from soccer practice. Does he? So these are the kind of things that eat away at a relationship when someone says one thing and does another, or doesn't do what they say they'll do over time. Now, all of us are guilty of a lot of that a little bit. But usually when that happens, we say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get to fix the toilet today. Something else came up. I'll do it tomorrow. And then we do it. So it doesn't really ruin reliability trust. We that know that that person, oh my gosh, I forgot to pick the kids up from soccer. I got a phone call and I just completely, you know, slipped my mind. Next time that happens, I'll have to put an alarm on my phone so it rings. So they take responsibility for what they did wrong and they make amends, or they do something so that doesn't continue to happen. But when overall the pattern in the relationship is you can't rely on them, you can't trust them to do what they said they did or do what they say they will do, that becomes an issue in a marriage. You can't trust someone if they're not reliable. So authenticity, sexual fidelity, safety, are they reliable? Another one is, can you trust that they care for you and care about you? So again, this goes back to, you're not just a role as a safety issue, but when you have a need, like maybe it's not a safety issue, or maybe it is a safety issue, but you have a need, like your car broke down, and you call them and they're watching the football game and they say, well, call AAA because I don't want to miss my game.
Wow.
So they don't really care about your need. It's all about them. You're there to serve them, but they don't really want to serve you. Or maybe you just got a surgery and these are all real stories. You've come home from the hospital and he never comes to your room to see if you need water or a meal. And you could be there for 24 hours and you've not seen anybody in your family who cared about you. In other words, you're just a role. You're there to serve them. they're not there to serve you or care about you. Or maybe you wake up in the middle of the night with an appendicitis and you need a ride to that, you know, hospital, and they tell you to call an Uber because they're tired and they have an important meeting the next day. These are all
real stories
that I have heard in my practice. And these devastate you. Or you have a baby and they don't show up because they're playing golf. Like, you don't matter to them. You are functional in a role, but you are not cared about as a person. That is devastating to a woman, to a wife, or a husband. But if that's you, you don't trust them to care. You can't rely on them to do what they say they'll do. You don't know who they are one way or the other. They're not honest with their personhood or what they do or what they say. You don't feel safe with them. So these are different areas of broken trust.
As you're sharing these stories, to me, it's just shocking. Like, that's crazy. My husband would never do something like that. But I think women that have been treated this way over and over and over again, they almost become numb to it. Like, they believe this is normal. And, you know, we really want to say to anybody listening, that's not normal.
Right.
It's just
not. And that's not the marriage covenant. The marriage covenant
not at all.
I've never been to a marriage where only one person makes promises. And some of those promises are, I will care about you. I will provide for you. I will protect you. I will cherish you. So, yes. And I will be faithful to you. So the promises that are made are meant to keep safety in a marriage, right? And when those promises are not kept and repeatedly violated, and when you say, ouch, or stop, or don't, or that bothers me, you're ignored, or you're made fun of, or you're scolded, or you're spiritually abused. Like, you're not being a good wife, you're not being submissive, you're not being support, whatever. That wears on you as a person.
Terribly.
So the last area is financial security. And I don't mean you can trust him to make a lot of money so that you can live in a big house.
Darn it.
It means that you trust your husband to be a good steward of the finances in your household. And he would trust you too. It goes both ways for the same things, but that he's not using the family money for nefarious or selfish purposes, leaving you without enough to do family business. So you don't have enough to pay for college, but he's taking a trip to Africa. You don't have enough to pay for your dentist, but he can buy new golf clubs. You don't have enough to, you know, buy groceries, but he's buying man toys. So there's money, but it's for him. And he will give you what he thinks you need, but you have no decision-making power in that. You have no mutuality in that. And your needs and wants are on the deficient side, where his are, I get what I want because I'm the man and I get to buy my man toys because I earn all the money. Or even, I earn all the money, but I'm only going to give you a portion of it and I'm only going to tell you what you can have. So those kind of areas break trust and safety in a relationship. And sadly, they happen a lot. And oftentimes we don't have words to describe some of that. So we don't know how to describe broken trust. Like, he hasn't cheated on me, but I still don't trust him. Why? Maybe so some of those answers will help you understand why you don't trust him.
Absolutely. Now, some of these issues and problems that you're talking about, a woman may go to her church and ask for help with them. What is some of the typical advice that she would get, especially in church, that doesn't work? And if somebody's listening and they get this advice, they can go ahead and ignore it.
Yeah, well, there's typical Christian answers that don't work. So I'll give them to you. You've probably heard them. And the typical one is, and this isn't often said by a counselor, but it's usually said by your husband when you call him on what he's done. Okay, you're right. Let's start with a clean slate. Yes, I was watching porn, or yes, I cheated on you, or yes, I spent too much money. And all right, you're supposed to forgive me. So let's just start with a clean slate and forget the past, and let's start with the present. And that's kind of the second one too, the forgive and forget. You know, let's forgive me, I'm sorry, I won't do it again, and don't bring it up again, please.
Okay, but isn't that biblical? Isn't that what Jesus does for us?
Well, Jesus is Jesus, and God has not given us a memory that doesn't forget. In fact, there's good reason to remember. So if you put your hand in a snake's mouth and it bites you, or a lion's mouth and it bites you, and you take it out and your hand's all bloody and you say, oh my gosh, I have to forgive that lion for biting me. Yes, that would be a good idea to forgive that lion for biting, but you don't want to forget that that lion bites, because then you would put your hand back in danger, right? So remembering people who have harmed you, especially when they're still harming you or they don't change, would be stupid. It would be stupid to forget that you've been harmed by someone who's harmful. Even if you forgive them, you might have to have boundaries. When we love our enemy, Jesus doesn't say you live with an enemy, that you kiss an enemy, that you hang out with an enemy. They're an enemy precisely because they've harmed you. That's the definition of an enemy. Otherwise, they'd just be a stranger. But an enemy is someone who has specifically harmed you. And Jesus is not saying you need to forgive them and have a relationship with them. He's saying, love your enemy and do them good. But he's not saying, and that means you have to live with them, you have to hang out with them, you have to go to bed with them, you have to share your money with them. Precisely because they've harmed you, you may not have to do that, and you may have the boundaries not to do that. So you don't want to forget, so that you can remember, this person's still dangerous. They haven't changed. They're still not trustworthy.
The Bible talks a lot really about important. Wisdom too. So
yeah, you know. The prudency danger and yes. Take refuge. And so when someone is, there's different categories of people in scripture. And I think this is something that we've ignored. We've not paid attention to. We've thought, oh, he's a good person. He'll change. There are good people who mess up.
Right.
David was an example. David was a king and he was a man after God's own heart. And he did a terrible thing to Bathsheba. He really messed up bad. He messed up a couple other times too, but he messed up there. So he was a good man who messed up. He owned it. He was confronted. He owned it. He didn't lie about it. He was given consequences. The baby died. His kingdom was ruined. His son tried to overthrow his kingdom. His family was a mess. And he never complained, like, I don't deserve those consequences. He took them. Those were his consequences, right? God said, I forgive you, but there's consequences of what you've done. And David accepted them. There's immature people who don't know any better. There's immature, the Bible talks about people who are ignorant and don't know any better. And so those are perhaps men who grew up in a horrible family and that's normal to them, or women. And so they can learn better, but they don't know better. So when you know better, you do better. And so helping those people grow and mature is really important. But the Bible also talks about two other categories of people that I don't think we talk about. And that's foolish people who don't learn. They keep making the same mistakes over and over again. They refuse to listen. They refuse feedback. They refuse correction. They're not trustworthy. And they will keep, they live for pleasure. They don't live for higher goals. They live for the quick one. And if you're married to someone like that, it is really tough because they don't change and they don't learn and they don't grow. And then the last category of someone who's a wicked person. And again, we don't like to talk about that because it feels judgmental. And I'm not judging, I'm discerning. The Bible tells us to have our senses sharpened as we mature so that we can discern between good and evil, because evil can masquerade as good. And Jesus says that, the wolf in sheep's clothing. And so what does a wicked person look like? They have smooth words, flattering tongues. They use deceit a lot. They use trickery a lot to make it look like they're doing good when they're really not doing good. And some of you live with someone like that and they don't change. And so that's why it's important not to forget, because you can forgive even a wicked person so that you're not covered with a spirit of bitterness and resentment, but you don't want to hang out with a wicked person. You don't want to be in their company and you don't want to give them access to you because they will harm you. They actually find pleasure in harming people.
It's hard to believe, but you know, I watch the true crime stories and sometimes I'm like, I can't believe there are people
I know
that would do this to another person, but there are wicked people.
Mm-hmm. And the Bible tells us that, and some of them are in the church. And we've seen more and more scandals of pastors, bully pastors, predators in the church who have done wicked things, horrible things to children, to women, to men, and think they should get away with it because they're the pastor, think they should get away with it because they know Jesus. And they're just manipulating words and they're manipulating spiritual principles in order to further abuse. And we need to recognize that.
I think of I interviewed her early on in our podcast, Alicia, and she was married to a pastor. And of course, she's paralyzed. And she would wake up to him literally raping her. Mm-hmm. And he was a pastor. So it's hard to believe, but it does happen mm-hmm. like that.
You know, we've talked about the term sometimes projection, like we're projecting our anger on someone, we're projecting our envy on someone and accusing them of something that we're actually guilty of. But projection can go in a positive way too. And I think Christians are really guilty of this. We project our good faith and our goodwill on someone else. We assume because we wouldn't do that, they wouldn't do that. Hmm. We assume because we wouldn't hurt someone like that on purpose. That they couldn't possibly have done this on purpose. They must have just been tired, or they just must have been, you know, not themselves. When maybe they did do it on purpose, and that gave them pleasure to see you hurt, to see you crying, to see you begging for mercy, whatever it is. It's hard for us who are thinking normal as normal human beings that the wicked find pleasure in hurting and taking advantage of other people. But the scriptures actually say that. And so I think we have to recognize that there are evil people in this world, and they do feel good when they can put you down.
Yeah, so sad. What about some other advice that a woman might get in the church that just doesn't work when it comes to a marriage without safety and trust?
So let's just have a clean slate, forgive and forget. And let me just say one more thing about forgetting. It's really important for the person who's been the immature person, the foolish person, if they're in a repentant state, wicked person, if they're in a repentant state. And there are some wicked people who have converted. I think of the song Amazing Grace. I can't remember the author of it, but if you read the history of that song.
Horatio Spafford, isn't that?
Yeah, Horatio, he was a slave trader. He was a slave trader, and he was taking big ships and going to Africa and capturing slaves and not caring about them, treating them as if they were worse than animals, and in selling them to people in the United States for slavery. And so when God got a hold of his heart, Amazing Grace, who saved a wretch like me. So wicked people can come to Christ. It usually they don't think they need to, but sometimes they do. So my point is that even people who come to a faith, whether they're immature, whether they're wicked, whether they're foolish, they shouldn't forget either. They shouldn't forget either.
Never.
I remember working with a man who was, I would call, had a wicked heart before he came to Christ, and he was an alcoholic. And he confessed to me that he would actually, as a single man, he would only go on Christian single dating sites because he knew that those women had such good qualities, he could take advantage of them.
He could get them to give him money.
He could get them to do things sexually for him. He could take advantage of them because they would feel like they needed to love and forgive and have long suffering and all of the good qualities that we have as women. He would target you because he knew that you were going to give him what he wanted. And so he had a pretty wicked heart. And so when I was talking to him after his conversion and he was still going to AA, and I said, why are you still going to AA? And why are you still go to counseling after all these years? He said, Leslie, I can never forget who I was. Because if I forget for a minute who I was and what Jesus did for me, I might go back there. And I don't want to ever go back there. So I go to AA and I go to counseling to remember that I need this. I need growth. I need healthy people in my life. And I need truth, because if I ever get away from that, that dark side might take over me again. And I don't want that to happen. So forgetting is just stupid. We need to remember so that we don't repeat our past mistakes, both in a victim role or in a perpetrator role. So that clean slate, forgive and forget, doesn't work. Second thing, the last thing that doesn't work is, let me give this analogy. If you have a house that's brand new, it's beautiful. After about a year or two or three, if you don't do any maintenance on it, if you never take out the garbage, even after a week or two, if you don't take out the garbage, if you don't clean the counters, if you don't do the dishes, if you don't pick up the crumbs from the floor, if you don't weed your garden, if you don't mow your grass, if you don't trim your trees, if you don't do the maintenance of housework, yard
pick
work,
out the cat litter. I keep trying to
cat
tell
litter,
my kids.
Your house is going to look like a wreck.
Gross. Yes.
In 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. So a house takes maintenance to maintain its appearance, to maintain its smell, to maintain its beauty. You have to take care of it. And sometimes a house, no matter how much you maintain it, it needs repairs. The toilet breaks down, you've got termite damage, your grass needs to be redone or whatever. So in a marriage, it's the same way. You can have this, like, two couple come together, oh, we're going to have this great marriage, but then you don't do any maintenance. You don't talk, you don't deal with things. You have this accumulation of garbage between you. You don't do any repair work. Trust is broken down and you don't fix that and you don't repair that. Well, what do you think your marriage is going to look like in 2 years, 5 years, 25 years? It's going to be a mess. And so the mistake that Christian counselors make is when a couple comes to marriage counseling after all of this mess, they start suggesting that you do some maintenance work, like go on a date night, let's have some more communication. When in fact, the maintenance isn't a bad idea, but it's not going to fix the termite problem. Like if you have a house and you haven't maintained it and you've got termite damage, if you paint the walls so that it looks fresher and replace the carpet and maintenance, but you don't fix the termite damage, the house is still going to collapse.
Exactly.
And so repair work in counseling, repairing of broken trust, repairing of relationship damage is different work than maintenance work. And so oftentimes counselors and Christian counselors apply the maintenance work to repair work, and therefore the marriage doesn't get repaired. It feels better. It always feels better to have a fresh coat of paint on the walls. But if your termites are still eating your foundation, your house is still in jeopardy.
Do you wonder whether your marriage is just difficult or if it's actually destructive? Leslie has a quick start guide that will help you answer that question. Not only that, if you find your marriage is in the destructive category, this guide will give you concrete biblical answers on your next steps. Go to leslievernick.com/start to get your free quick start guide. And please know this, you are seen, you are heard, and friend, you are valued.
How can a woman know if it's termites or if she just needs maintenance work?
Well, we need both, but think of a car. So your maintenance is putting your gas in the car. Your maintenance is checking your oil. My daughter, when she was in college, she ignored the maintenance. So it said, check oil, check oil, check oil. And she said, oh, I'll wait till I get home. My dad can do that.
Oh, no.
You know, kids are. And she'd ignore the maintenance. And then the car stopped running. Right. So then she put oil in it. It didn't work. Like, what? Yeah, when is not working? So then maintenance doesn't work anymore because the car's engine is shot. Right. So now it needs a whole new engine. And this is often what happens is your husband has ignored you. You said, hey, you know, I don't trust things. I don't feel safe. You know, and all of a sudden you're done, you're leaving. And he's calling me on Christmas Eve saying, oh, we need marriage counseling. I said, is this the first time this she told you this? No, but I didn't listen before. Now the whole house is collapsing and now it's time. So I think it's really important for you not to ignore those signs. But the maintenance is, you know, taking care of little things, of doing connection work, making sure that you're still connecting together and you're still feeling that loving feeling and you're resolving issues so that brick walls aren't coming between you. Repair work is when trust and safety have broken down. You don't feel safe and you don't trust. And then, okay, what do we need? He's had an affair. You've caught him in a lie. You know, over time, the marriage is just, and it might be no repair work. It might be just a ton of maintenance that you've neglected, just like my daughter neglected the oil. And now the car is broken down, the marriage is broken down, but it might not be because of trust and safety. So you just have to ask yourself, are these five areas of trust and safety jeopardized, compromised, broken? And if so, those need to be addressed first. And the first one that you have to address is safety, because you can't even have an honest conversation with your husband about who you are, what you want, what's really going on, how you really feel, if he can't handle it and he's going to blow up or he's not going to talk to you for 3 weeks. Or you don't feel safe. So unless you can create some trust of safety that I can be fully myself and tell you what I feel and who I am and what I want, and he can do the same, and you can do that in a safe place so that you can get to the next level, how can you repair anything? Because you can't. You're still living both. You're living in fear. You can't do that. So safety, trust is the very first level of trust that has to be rebuilt.
How do you rebuild trust and safety? I mean, if you're with an emotionally unsafe person and he blows his top all the time and you want, obviously date night's not going to fix that. How do you begin to rebuild trust and safety?
So the person who breaks safety, so if he's scaring you or you're both escalating, then you need to start doing some individual work. So this is where I think, again, mistakes are made in marriage counseling. Like somehow we've got to do this together. You're not capable of having a conversation together yet, because neither one of you can manage your emotions, right? So you're always escalating, or one of you is escalating, the other one's shutting down because you're scared. So the one who's breaking trust of safety has to go back to that, own it. I admit, I accept that I'm not capable. I wish I were, but I'm not capable of managing my emotions yet, When she says something I don't like, or when I get triggered, or when I get upset, I just blow 1 to 10. And so then that wrecks safety. So I have to own, I have my own work to do before we can do our work together. Same for a woman. Maybe you've been so shut down in your life and so beaten down that you don't even know who you are. You couldn't have a conversation about what you really want, even if someone gave you $1 million, because you have no idea what you really want. You've never given it thought because you've never been allowed to think that way, or you've never been encouraged to. So you might need to do your own work at being able to explore who God's called you to be and who God's made you to be and what you want and what you don't want before you can even have a conversation with your husband about that, because you just come up blank, and then it kind of feeds the idea that you're just a role as a wife versus a person, and you don't want to do that anymore. And so you need to do your own work. And so I always recommend that if safety trust has been broken, then there's no way you can talk about the other issues because you're too scared. It just brings up all the old stuff again. So you might need to do individual work until each of you are at a place where there's enough self-control, self-awareness. All right. So it's not like you have perfect self-control. All of us have limited capacity. So I can control myself and not eat bad until I'm so hungry that I just want to eat whatever.
Exactly. Right. Yes.
Yeah. So we only have so much capacity. We can only hold our bodily functions so long before they're just going to come out. So understand that that's part of being human. So I think part of the individual work is to become self-aware of what my capacity is, and to know when I'm starting to get to a place of I don't have capacity. And so if I don't have capacity anymore, just like when I'm driving my car and I might have to go to the bathroom, I'm aware of how much time I have before I'm going to pee in the car, right? So you know the capacity that you have, and I have 15 minutes or I have 3 minutes. I got to find a gas station really fast or a paper cup or whatever. So you know your capacity, and some emotions are less like vomiting. You have very little capacity. You have very little capacity to hold that. So it might be 30 seconds before you have to pull over and do it, right? And vomit outside the car. So there's different parts of you that have less capacity to contain it. So if your emotions are just like vomit all the time, and you're going from 1 to 10 in less than 30 seconds, you're going to have to learn to build capacity for handling that before you have hard conversations about anything to rebuild safety and trust. That's the internal work that you have to do first before you can do the repair work on the relationship. And sort of like when you have a house full of termites, you don't repair the termite damage without getting rid of the termites first.
Yes.
Right. And so that has to be done. And that might be some individual work that's broken the safety and trust before you can rebuild the safety and trust, because you don't want to keep breaking it. Or, you know, why spend the money on fixing the termite damage if you don't get rid of the termites? It's just a waste of money.
Well, and if you're sitting there telling your husband, look, there's termites, and they're right in front of their of his face, and he's like, no, I don't see any termites, and he doesn't agree that there's a problem, then you're kind of stuck, aren't you?
Not necessarily, because again, if you're saying to him, I don't trust you, I don't feel safe, he might feel totally safe with you because you've been trustworthy. You've been safe. You've been That's accommodating, true. Right? You've cared for him. You haven't broken trust. So here's, if you say, I don't feel safe with you when you yell, when you blow up, you've threatened us, when you left for 2 weeks and I don't know where you are, you won't talk to me for a month. I don't like that. I don't feel safe. And that doesn't matter to him, that I don't care how you feel. I'm happy. We're good. That's all that matters. That gives you a lot of information about where you're at in this marriage.
Sure does. Yeah.
Right. So even speaking up a little bit like that, it might not be the answer you want, but it might be the answer you need to see where you are in the hierarchy of what's important to him. And what's important to him, if he gives you that answer, is him, not your marriage, not your family. What's important to him is him. And as long as you're there to meet his needs, it's like my cell phone. My cell phone is important to me only in the service it provides. It has no intrinsic value. If it started talking to me and saying, I'm lonely, you want to talk to me? I'm like, what? No, I don't want to talk to you.
No, or, thank you.
Or if it says, I don't like the way you treat me, you don't clean me enough. I'm like, stop it already. You know, I don't care how it feels. All I want it to do is do what I want it to do. And as long as it does all that, I'm good with it. you know, as long as it turns on when I want and gives me my email when I want and wakes me up when I need and gives me my apps and my airplane tickets and all those kind of things, I'll keep you. And if you don't do that and you start complaining a lot and telling me I got to do something for you, I'm going to get a different cell phone. And that's how husbands often treat wives.
So true.
And sadly, not always, but I think that sometimes I remember Julie talking to a pastor about he wanted to vet me before he was going to allow me to speak in his church. And obviously I didn't pass because he didn't invite me to speak. But, you know, because he's too concerned that I'm like, this isn't working. Like there's so, I said, what are you so afraid of? And he said, I'm afraid that if we actually say all this stuff, that we will have hundreds of women who say to us that we don't want to stay married to our husbands. And now what do we do? And so I think he was afraid of that. Because I think we've allowed people to think that marriage is in service of the man. Like your sex life is in service of him. He has needs. He has needs. He has needs. Well, what about you and your needs? Like you are a person too. We just got a blog question that said, you know, I'm 5 weeks postpartum and, you know, my husband has needs. And if I'm not willing to have sex with him, he's going to, you know, he's going to go back into his addiction and it's all my fault. Like somehow you're to meet his needs. What about her needs? Her body's still healing. She's got a newborn. He's not going to die if he doesn't have a release, but he thinks he's going to. Wow. But I think this is the idea of you are my wife. You are to do what I need you to do for me, but don't ask me to think about you. And when we collude with that as women, we are not only dishonoring him because we're allowing him to use us, we are dishonoring ourselves. And we are teaching our children, our male children, that this is what marriage looks like and you get to dishonor your wife.
Yes.
I watched the Shiny Happy Family episode yesterday, the first one. I've watched it before, but we're teaching it to some other people with how to think about it. And it was real interesting because for those of you who don't know, the Duggar family, who was the 19 and counting, you know, that whole documentary on that.
19 so, kids and counting. Yeah.
19 kids and counting. Josh Duggar has been arrested for, you know, all kinds of stuff, but
he was the oldest child. Yes.
He was the oldest child, but they had a family there that he dated his daughter. And the family there, he dated this man's daughter on the Mr. Holt, who was on the show. And he said, I asked Jim Bob, are you saying that you let Josh date my daughter as a carrot so that he wouldn't do some of this other stuff? In other words, your daughter is an object to help my son not molest his sisters.
Wow.
And he didn't quite say that, but the father was outraged. I thought they were having this boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, but really you were allowing Josh to date my daughter because she would distract him what the evil he was doing in your home, right? And so she's just an object to use for him so he doesn't do it with his sisters. I mean, that's the thinking of some of this, that we are just there to serve men, that that's our role. That's why we've been created. We are secondary in the kingdom. And that is the farthest thing from God's heart. So I think it's time for women to start maturing themselves from the childlike dependent position to the fully formed adult. And I think of that song that we learned as children, I'm going to let it shine, this little light of mine. Don't let anyone blow it out. And I just encourage women who are listening to this, that you may have a really hard marriage. You might have a husband who doesn't value you. That doesn't mean that God doesn't value you and you don't value you. So it doesn't mean that we go out sticking up for ourselves, pounding our chest, saying, I don't care about you, but I care about you and I want to be a godly woman. But a godly woman doesn't allow herself, if she can help it, to be treated like an object in service of someone else's sin.
So if a woman, Leslie, is listening and beginning to wake up to the fact that she is unsafe and has broken trust in her relationship, what should she do? What's the next step for her?
So the next step for her is to stop working on the marriage and start working on herself.
So don't try to change him or get him to see.
She's trying to change him so that she feels better. So I don't feel so unsafe. So I don't feel so insecure. And for those of you who've tried it and it works, if he changes and he hears you, then he values you and that's good. He might just not know any better. He might just be living like his dad lived. And so as you start saying, ouch, and don't, I don't like that. And they're hearing you and caring about that. That's all how marriage works. That's a good thing, right? But if you've said that, ouch, don't, I don't like that. That's not how I want our home to go. I don't want you to treat the kids this way. This feels unsafe to me. And he ignores you, demeans you, minimizes you, disparages you, lies to you, doesn't listen to you, then what you are is you are not a helpmate. You are just a service provider to meet his needs. You are not a person to love or care about. Obviously, he's showing you that by his responses. So now it's not about fixing him or fixing the marriage. It's about you figuring out what you're going to do and what you need to do to get safe and strong.
So does she go and try to have a conversation with him, or?
If she's already had a conversation with him and she's been put down and diminished and dismissed and demeaned, having a repeated conversation like that is only rubbing more salt in the wound, right? So I'm not saying don't try it again with a stronger place, but even saying to him, hey, it feels to me like I don't matter. It feels to me like if I do my role, my own feelings about what I want in this marriage or what I need in this marriage don't matter to you. Is that true? You could say that. And he might say, I don't know why you're so selfish. And then it kind of says, yep, it's true. He's calling my needs selfish and his needs real.
What if that's the case, if he blows her off or gets mad or says she's nuts, what is her next step?
Her next step is to recognize, I cannot change him. I cannot change him. He's selfish. He's self-centered. He's whatever he is. He's blind, but he doesn't want to hear from me. I'm not someone he values. Like, there's people who say things to me and I think, oh my gosh, thank you. That really helped me. They say things to me or about life that's valuable to me. Thank you. You're apparently not valuable to him for feedback. Like you're saying, hey, don't I matter? No, you don't really. Then understand that that's what he's telling you. So don't keep begging to matter to him. The person who you have to matter to now is you. So what do you need to do to get safe? Because you've said, I don't feel safe. And he's saying, I don't care how you feel. So now you have to care how you feel. So what do you need to do to be safe? And there's so many variables of the answer to that question, but I think that's the question. The prudent see danger and take refuge. They steward their safety. And if you're a mom, you're responsible to steward your children's safety as well. When Joseph was the parent of baby Jesus and Herod was out to kill all the children under two, God didn't wake up Joseph and say, just trust me, submit to the authorities. He said, flee,
flee,
flee, take baby Jesus and go. That may be what you need to do if you're not safe. Or if you're taking pills, drinking vodka, getting depressed, and you're feeling suicidal and you're not safe with yourself, get help for yourself.
Yes.
Stop trying to fix the marriage. And now you need to fix you so that you're stronger and more clear about your next right steps. But your next right steps aren't ending your life. Your next right steps are to get help for you so that you value you, because God values you, even if he doesn't. There were people who did not value Jesus. Judas did not value Jesus. The Pharisees did not value Jesus. The rich young ruler did not value Jesus. That didn't make Jesus worth less. And sometimes we think, I'm worth less because he doesn't value me. It's not true. There are people who aren't going to value you. You have to value you because God values you. And so don't let anyone blow your light out.
Absolutely. And I think too, I just want to say, if there's somebody listening and they know, okay, I need to do my own work, I need my own help, please, and you know, maybe your church is just going to give you some of those pat answers, go to leslievernick.com. Let's look into, you know, the private coaching groups, the Conquer program, and see what is available for you right now, because Leslie, you have created so many incredible programs that people can do anywhere in the world and get real valuable, practical help that you can apply into your life right now and help you with those next steps.
And there's even a test on our website. Are you in a destructive marriage? Take the test. See, because sometimes it's just a difficult marriage. Sometimes it's just a disappointing marriage. And maybe you need to accept that you're not going to have this A+ marriage. Most people don't. I've been a marriage counselor for over 40 years. I can't count on one hand the number of A+ marriages I've seen, including my own. So most marriages are around a B-, C+, with a few A moments and a few D- moments. And that's reality. And that's part of just life. You're living with a broken person, you're a broken person, and you got broken kids. And so there's a lot of chaos going on there. So understand whether it's a difficult marriage, a disappointing marriage, or a destructive marriage. And if you're in a destructive marriage, then for your children's welfare and for yours, as well as for your spouse's potential welfare, you might be the one who takes the first step of getting stronger and healthier. Because if you're healthy and he stays unhealthy, then you can hopefully influence him. If he's unhealthy and you're unhealthy, guess what? You're going to have an unhealthy marriage and all your kids are going to be unhealthy because that's what they learn. So at the very least, you do your work to get healthy and strong.
Can you pray for us, Leslie?
Yeah. Lord Jesus, I thank you for this podcast, that we have an opportunity to speak to women who may not have access to counseling, may not have access to wise people in their life. Father, I pray that if this resonates with someone who's listening, that you would speak to her heart directly, that she is loved, she is valuable as a person, not just as a woman to serve, but as a person who's been created by you to be in your image, to be an image bearer of the Most High God, and that you wouldn't let anyone squash her. And when someone is squashing her, Lord, it's okay for her to stand up for herself. It's okay for her to say no. And Lord, she does have choices. At least in this country, we do have the freedom to choose as women. We don't have to be slave wives. Some cultures, there are slave wives, and that's what they are. And you hate that, Lord. That's not your will for marriage. But people have oppressed people all of history, including people of color, people of different genders, people of different cultures. And so, Lord, our sin nature rules at times if we're not focused on you and submitted to you. And so, Lord, even in this country, we have people who call the name of Christ who are oppressors, who are abusers. They're in the church. You call them wolves in sheep's clothing. And so, Father, if someone's married to someone like this, I just pray that you would help them see that you see it and you hate it, and they have options, and they have legal options sometimes to protect themselves. You've given us the legal authorities to protect us against evildoers, Lord. And if there's someone who's being physically abused or sexually abused in their marriage, that you would just help them to go for help to a domestic violence shelter, to someone who's wise who can help them. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to Relationship Truth Unfiltered. If you need clarity on whether your marriage is difficult, disappointing, or destructive, go right now to LeslieVernick.com/start. It's totally private and will help you get clear on your next step. Until next time, may God bless all of your relationships with Him, with yourself, and with others.